Eddie, the freshman year. Chapter 5. Winter Semester, Part 1. In addition to training with the track team, Eddie is also continuing his training at home. Since it is cooler out and the days are shorter, he does not have as many chances to ride his bicycle. On one particular Saturday, however, the temperature is in the high 60s, which is unusual for this time of year. He calls Mark and asks if he wants to go on a ride to the beach. This is the perfect time for Mark to give his new bicycle a good test ride. Mark agrees, and Eddie gets ready to go. Packing a few pieces of fruit, water, and some amino acid supplements, Eddie rides to Mark's house. When Eddie arrives, Mark is ready to go. Eddie, however, quickly points out to Mark that he is not ready to go. Eddie tells Mark to go inside and get some food and water because he will need it once he gets to the beach. Mark heads back inside and returns with some fruit and a few bottles of water. The cyclists head toward the parkway and take the paved path to the beach. As they ride along the path, Eddie glimpses toward the portal, wondering if Mark would believe him if he told him about it. Eddie decides to save that discussion for another day. Eddie and Mark are having a highly energetic ride. Surprising to Eddie, Mark is able to keep up reasonably well. Eddie and Mark alternate who is in the lead, giving each one a chance to set the pace. As they approach the beach entrance, Eddie takes the lead since he is more familiar with the area. When they come to the turnabout, which has an obelisk in the center of it, they make their way around the circle and go down the road to the left. A half mile down the road is a large parking lot, which they enter. At the end of the parking lot, there is a concession area. The concession area is closed because it is winter. Between the parking lot and the road, there is an Olympic-sized swimming pool for those who prefer swimming in fresh water. But, just like the concession area, the pool is also closed for the winter. Eddie and Mark get off their bicycles and walk onto the nearly abandoned beach. Staring out at the ocean, Eddie asks Mark, "So, what do you think Mahoney does on a Saturday?" Mark replies, "Sit on his ass and worry about Braden." Eddie, recalling the 4x440 relay race during which Braden ran two legs, laughs and says, "Yeah. You're probably right about that one." Looking over at the ocean, Eddie tells Mark, "If this were summer, I'd be in the water right now." Mark replies, "What about your bike? Where do you keep it?" Pointing to the concession stand at the end of the parking lot, Eddie tells Mark, "There's a bike rack over there. It's even bolted down. I just bring a lock." Mark looks around at the ocean, the miles of beach, the pool, the concession stand, and compliments Eddie, telling him, "You got a really good setup here. It's no wonder you're always headed down to the beach." Eddie remarks, "Yeah. The only thing missing today are the girls." Eddie and Mark walk back up to the parking lot. Eddie asks Mark, pointing farther down the beach, "Do you want to ride to the last parking lot up there, turn around, and head home?" Mark, not knowing or caring how far away the parking lot is, replies, "Sure." As they slowly ride down the road that parallels the beach, the sound of crashing waves relaxes the two riders. The last parking lot, which is a much smaller one with no amenities, turns out to be only 2 miles down the road. Eddie and Mark stop in the parking lot and have their snack and drink some water. Eddie also takes his supplements, prompting Mark to ask, "What are those that you're taking?" Eddie replies, "They are my supplements, the amino acids. It's for building muscle." Mark, although he is curious, does not ask Eddie any other questions just yet. They turn around and head down the road back to the beach entrance. At the entrance, they hang a right, and the relaxing part of the ride is over. The ride home is the second part of the workout. Eddie tells Mark that the trip is about 11 miles each way. This is not a long distance for either of them to ride, but the workout is in the speed at which they ride. Riding up the path, an unofficial competition begins. Eddie, in the lead, speeds up, with Mark trying to keep up. Mark keeps up reasonably well, but the seasoned cyclist, Eddie, is faster. Eddie slows his pace and lets Mark take the lead. Now it's Mark's turn. Eddie drafts behind Mark, conserving his energy at the expense of Mark's. At the end of the path, Eddie and Mark stop and chat for a while. Mark asks Eddie, "How do you keep up so easily?" Eddie tells Mark, "I draft off of you." Mark asks, "You what?" Eddie replies, "I follow you closely, and it breaks the wind resistance. You do all the work, and I use less energy." Mark mentions, "I wonder if that works in running too." Serious, but joking, Eddie replies, "Yes, it does. But don't tell Braden. He's always out in front." Thinking more about the concept of drafting, Mark figures it out and suggests, "So, if we run close behind each other, especially in the distance races, and trade off the lead, we conserve energy." Eddie replies, "Yeah. And you'll run a better time. That's why Mitchell is always running on someone's heels in the mile. And that's how he kicked Mahoney's ass in the 880. So, Mitchell always lets the other runner set the pace and burn out. Then, he has a lot left at the end and wins the race." Mark says to Eddie, "We have to tell everybody about this." Eddie replies, "I thought everyone knew about drafting. We'll have to spread the word. Apparently not everyone knows, so the tribe may have just stepped up a notch or two in their skill level." Mark, who has always relied on brute strength and speed, now has added an important skill to his repertoire. Mark and Eddie continue the short ride toward Mark's house. As they approach Mark's house, Mark heads up his driveway, and Eddie rides home. It's a sure bet that Mark will be seen at the beach a lot more this next spring and summer. Riding a bicycle 11 miles to the beach is much easier and faster than running 11 miles. And hanging out at the beach has the added benefit of being able to go into the water to cool off. Monday's track practice comes as usual after school, but with a surprise to the freshmen. Mr. Fraser announces that the meet next Saturday will be a four-way meet, meaning four teams will be competing. The upperclassmen, who were on the team last year, are all too familiar with a four-way meet. In a four-way meet, the competition is always more challenging. Instead of one opposing team having one or two star runners in every event, there are three opposing teams, each with their own one or two star runners. It doesn't take long to figure out that there will be a lot more losers than winners. Mr. Fraser also mentions that, in most cases, the athletes will be running in two events, not three. The team will practice Monday through Thursday for the week before the meet. On Friday, the team will be allowed to rest, allowing for complete physical recovery before the big event. Fortunately, for the team, it is a home meet, so they will have the advantage of not having to wake up early and travel. Everyone already knows who the opposing teams are because the meet schedule is published at the beginning of the season. Before practice one day, Eddie checks the schedule to remind himself who will be the opposition. On the list of schools that will be competing is Centerville High School. Eddie thinks to himself, what was the deal with them last year? Then it occurred to Eddie, thinking to himself, oh, yeah. McCrutchen. That guy again. Eddie, headed to the locker room, intends to tell Mark. In the locker room, Eddie finds Mark, who is talking with Braden. Announcing his entrance, Eddie says to Mark and Braden, guess who's back on Saturday? Mark and Braden look at each other, at a loss to figure out whom Eddie is talking about. Eddie just tells them, McCrutchen. One of the teams we're up against is Centerville. Mark grins and says, yeah. We worked him over good last year. Braden throws a monkey wrench in the conversation, stating, I wonder if he even made the team. Mark comments, he'd better be on the team. I want to mess with his mind some more. Braden has no problem reminding everyone, yeah, we kicked their ass big time last year, and we're gonna do it again. After practice, Mr. Fraser calls a short team meeting and has the team sit on the bleachers. Mr. Fraser tells the team everything he could dig up regarding the opposition for the upcoming meet. As he is speaking, Kathy, Paula, and Barbara, the team assistants, walk down the metal staircase and sit with the team on the bleachers. Mr. Fraser tells the team, Kathy, Paula, and Barbara will now talk to you. Pay very close attention to what they have to say. Going through the events one by one, Kathy, Paula, and Barbara offer the names of some of the competitors and what their best known time is for each race. After going through the running events, they move on to the high jump and shot put. When the girls are done, Mr. Fraser dismisses the team for the day. As the team walks up the metal stairway to the hallway, Eddie turns to check out Kathy, Paula, and Barbara from a higher vantage point. With his eyes on the girls rather than where he is going, Eddie trips and stumbles into Mark, taking Mark, who is also checking out the scenery, down with him. Braden, following Eddie, trips over Eddie, causing a domino effect on the stairway. Mr. Fraser, not missing a beat, yells out to them, "You guys can definitely run, but it looks like you need a little help walking." Mr. Fraser was clueless what caused the commotion, but everyone on the stairway knew. In the locker room, Braden mentions to Eddie and Mark, "Well, at least there's one for each of you." Eddie and Mark laugh off Braden's comment, but Braden's comment couldn't be closer to the truth. Braden, not letting the moment pass, asks Eddie, "So who gets who?" Eddie replies, "I'll take Kathy." Mark, who is glad to hear that, replies, "Okay, then. I'll go with Paula." Eddie then says to Braden, "Well, bro, that leaves you with Barbara." Braden, not missing a beat, replies, "I ain't shopping. I still got Wendy." Johnson pipes up and says, "Remember, the coach said their job is to flirt," which is apparently the only thing Johnson remembers about the girls. Everyone eventually heads home, with a couple of new things to now think about this week. Saturday morning arrives, and so do the buses transporting the competition and a few spectators. Saturday morning track meets usually begin at 10 a.m. and are usually done by 1 p.m. As the teams arrive, some student volunteers direct them to the proper location. Meanwhile, Mr. Fraser and the team assistants are going over some last-minute details with the team. He reminds the team that, since this is a four-way meet, there will be medals for the winners of each event. Medals issued for first, second, and third place are supposed to induce the runners to perform better. Some athletes, mostly seniors, have a nice collection of medals they've won over the last 3 years. Getting around to a very important topic, Mr. Fraser addresses his team, "This is our first meet of the season. Last year, some of you, as always, delivered a stellar performance. Before we get out on the track today, I want you to hear something that we all need not forget. If you are a sophomore, junior, or senior, you have heard me say this before. Some of you need to hear it again. If you are a freshman, what I am about to tell you is very important." Telling his team one of his favorite stories, Mr. Fraser explains, "Many of you have heard me tell this before, but some of you need to hear it again. When I was in my early teens, one day it was very stormy outside. My father was watching a track meet on television. As most of you probably know, track was my sport, so I watched along with him. I remember that day very well, as if it were yesterday. When my race, the 100-yard dash, came up, I watched what the runners did before they got into the blocks. I watched them as they were waiting for the gun. I watched very carefully when the gun went off and they left the blocks. And I watched every step as they raced toward the finish line. I wanted to learn as much as I can." Never hearing Mr. Fraser talk about his past before, Mr. Fraser now has Eddie's full attention. Braden, leaning forward with his arms resting on his thighs, is particularly interested in what his coach has to say. Mark, for once, is paying close attention and not messing with someone. Even some of the spectators who arrived early are listening to Mr. Fraser's presentation to his team. Explaining to his team, when he first learned that there is only one winner in any race, Mr. Fraser continues, "Once the 100-yard dash was over, it was clear to my father and I which runner took first place. But second and third place seemed to be a tie. While we were waiting to find out who came in second and third place, I asked my father, 'Who do you think came in second place?' My father turned to me, looked right in my eye, and said, 'George. It doesn't matter. They both lost. Only one person wins the race. Everyone else is a loser.' I told my father, 'But they give medals for second and third place.' My father replied, 'So what? They still lost.' That day, my father wanted to teach me a lesson, so he told me, 'George, go and get your Bible.' I went and got my Bible, and my father told me, 'Open your Bible to 1 Corinthians, chapter 9, verse 24, and read it to me.' I read to him, 'Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you win.' My father looked me straight in the eye and said to me, 'George, there is only one winner. Everyone else is a loser. It's that simple.' I saw a very deep conviction in his eyes when he told me that. Understand this. There is only one winner. Now, listen to this. My father asked me, 'George, when you play football in school and your team loses, do you go around boasting to everyone that your team came in second place?' Before I could even answer him, he yelled out, 'Of course you don't. Second place is nothing to be proud of, especially if there are only two teams playing. Whether there are two, six, or 12 runners in the race, there is still only one winner. No one ever boasts about coming in second place. Mark my word. There is only one winner. Whoever comes in second place is the first loser. If you come in second place, learn from the situation, figure out what you need to improve, and do better next time.'" Summing up his presentation, Mr. Fraser concludes, "There is no reason why we can't win everything out there today. This is the first meet of the year. Word will get around the division very quickly about who the major contenders are. Word will also get around of who the losers are. You do not want to have the reputation of being a loser. Let's all get out there and win." The team claps, gaining a renewed understanding about the importance of winning. At the requisite starting time, all of the runners are in the arena, ready to go. The first event is the 40-yard dash. Since there are four teams, and each team is allowed to have three contestants, 12 runners will be competing. There will be two preliminary heats. The fastest six times will compete in the 40-yard dash final. Past performance determines whether a runner is in the first or second heat. As the coaches are discussing procedural issues, which they seem to do every year, Eddie spots McCutcheon warming up. He points McCutcheon out to Mark, who hopes to run against him in some event today. Mr. Fraser walks over to his sprinters and tells Eddie and Mark that they are in the first heat, and tells Johnson that he is in the second heat. Mr. Fraser tells Mark, "Eddie and Johnson, don't let me down." That is all that the three sprinters need to hear in order to run a better race. The meet announcer tells all of the runners of the 40-yard dash to make their way to the starting line. The lane assignments for the preliminary heats are based upon qualifying times. Eddie is assigned to lane 2 and Mark to lane 4. McCutcheon is not found among the sprinters. As the runners get ready, the Centerville coach, Mr. Ruff, is complaining to one of the timekeepers that the sprint is a 40-yard dash, not a 50 or 55-yard dash. Mr. Ruff makes this complaint every year. In winter track, the sprint can be a 40-yard, 50-yard, 55-yard, or 60-yard dash, depending on the track size. Not to mention, the 40-yard dash happens to be the divisional standard. Mr. Ruff's complaining gets him nowhere, as one of the timekeepers explains to him that it is a regulation track. The starter, who is the official that starts the races, makes the announcement, "On your marks. Ready to run in their first high school meet, Eddie and Mark are filled with adrenaline. They are both aware that this is now real competition. The starter, with a long drawn-out tone, announces set. Waiting for the buzzer, the runners are in the set position and are motionless. Time appears to stand still. The starter hits the buzzer, and the runners are off. All of the runners are quickly out of the blocks. A few steps out of the blocks, the runners are all approaching their top speed. At 10 yards, there is a clear leader, Eddie. He is followed closely by Mark. One step behind Mark are two runners that are head-to-head. At the halfway point, Eddie quickly realizes that this is no easy race. Although he is in first place, if he does not keep up his speed or move faster, he could be easily overtaken. At 30 yards into the race, it appears that Eddie has the race wrapped up. Out of his peripheral vision, he sees a runner to his right gaining ground. The last thing a runner wants to do is to turn his head to see who it may be. Turning your head during a sprint will cause you to slow your pace and run erratically, and perhaps lose your lead. Eddie, focused on the finish line, crosses first, followed very closely by Mark. After Mark, two runners cross at nearly the same time. The runners in fifth and sixth place are not too far behind, but will probably not make the final heat. Wasting no time, the meet director tells the runners in the second heat to get ready. Eddie is watching the officials to see how they work together. He is looking for a way to anticipate the buzzer. He notices there are two officials operating the buzzers, one at the far end of the track and one at the starting line. Eddie, near the finish line, watches the runners as they get ready. He sees Johnson in lane 4. The starter at the starting line announces, "On your marks," as Eddie watches intently. The starter then announces, "Set." Off to the side of the track, the starter fixes his gaze at the runners. Once the runners are set, he nods his head. Eddie hears the buzzer go off, but the starter at the starting line did not move his foot to operate the buzzer. Eddie surmises that the nod of the head signals the other starter to hit the buzzer while the one at the starting line looks for a false start. If there is a false start, the starter at the starting line would hit his foot switch, sounding the buzzer a second time. Eddie decides he would watch this more closely the next chance he got. Meanwhile, during Eddie's deep thought, Johnson just came in second place in his heat. Eddie, Mark, and Johnson exchange high fives and will be in the final heat. As the attention turns toward the 4x220 relay race, the group heads back to the team bench to watch that event. After some discussion between the timekeepers, the meet announcer declares the results. Competing in the 100-yard dash final, Edward Boganskaya, 4.5 seconds. Mark Svoboda, 4.55 seconds. Lucius Clay, 4.6 seconds. Alan Williams, 4.8 seconds. John Brady, 4.6 seconds. Eric Johnson, 4.7 seconds. With his three sprinters in the final, Mr. Fraser could not be more pleased with the results. Mark asks Mr. Fraser, "How did I get a 4.55? Mr. Fraser explains to Mark, "Eddie got a 4.5, third place got a 4.6, so they assign the guy between them, you, a 4.55. Mark is not accustomed to a race where less than a tenth of a second potentially determines the winner and loser. When in middle school, Mark usually beat his competition in the 100-yard dash by several tenths of a second. During the 4x220 relay event, Kathy, one of Mr. Fraser's team assistants, comes up to Eddie and says to him, "So, you're Eddie?" Eddie simply replies, "Yeah. That's me." Kathy tells Eddie, "That was a really good race you ran." Eddie, not used to the attention, tells Kathy, "Yeah, but it's not over yet. There's still the final." Looking at her clipboard, Kathy tells Eddie, "You have the best time today." Eddie sees on Kathy's clipboard that the winner of the other heat ran a 4.6. Quickly flipping the page, Kathy looks at her stopwatch, and writes something down as Mahoney passes the baton to the next runner. Kathy mentions to Eddie, Mahoney's having a bad day. Eddie tells Kathy, I don't really talk to him much. Kathy giggles and tells Eddie, that's because he doesn't like you. You're running his events. You're faster than he is, and he doesn't like it. Eddie, without thinking about what he is about to say, tells Kathy, using Mahoney's logic, no one here should like me because I'm the fastest one here. Eddie thinks to himself, wow. Did I just say that? Attracted to Eddie's confidence, Kathy tells him, I'll have my eyes on you the whole time during the final. Touching Eddie on his arm, Kathy warmly says to him, good luck, as she goes about her team duties. At the end of the relay, Kathy confers with Mr. Fraser and records the team's time. Kathy, Paula, and Barbara, each with several stopwatches hanging from their necks, also record the other team's approximate split and composite times. With the efforts of his three team assistants, Mr. Fraser has all the statistics he needs going into future competitions. Unknown to the other coaches, Mr. Fraser is running a high-tech organization. The next event is the mile. Each team is allowed three runners, making for a crowded field on the 220-yard track. Following the one-mile run will be the 40-yard dash final. The position of the 40-yard dash final within the order of events varies from meet to meet, with the coaches coming to a consensual agreement. This is because the finalists are scheduled for other events, and no coach wants their runners in back-to-back races. More so than the coaches, the runners also do not want to be in back-to-back events. While the mile is underway, Eddie walks toward the starting line for the 40-yard dash. While he is walking, he catches Kathy glancing his way, smiling at him when he catches her eye. Mark, already at the starting line, asks Eddie, are you ready? Eddie replies to Mark, more than ever. Eddie sees Johnson headed their way. With six runners in the final, four of them were from Eddie's heat and two from Johnson's. Once the mile is completed, all eyes are on the 40-yard dash. The two starters operating the buzzers move into position. The lanes are assigned to the finalists by another official. Eddie is in lane 4, Mark in lane 2, and Johnson in lane 6. The better qualifying times are usually assigned the inside lanes. There is also an unofficial rule to not place runners on the same team next to each other if possible. At the finish line, there are two officials with Polaroid cameras to get a photo of the finish. This will give objective evidence in the event of a very close race. Eddie, looking down the track, sees Kathy looking right at him. Eddie remembers what she said a while ago, which is that she would have her eyes on him the whole time. Mark walks over to Eddie and whispers to him, "The guy in lane 3 has the best time of the competitors. I'm going to mess with his head." The starter asks the runners if they are ready. Everyone indicates that they are, and get in position behind their blocks. The starter then announces, "On your marks." The runners position themselves in the blocks. When they are almost in position, Mark says to the runner in lane 3, "I thought you told him you were ready." A split second after Mark's comment, the starter announces, "Set." Somewhat distracted, the runner in lane 3 turns his head and looks at Mark. Mark whispers to the runner in lane 3, "Your shoelaces." Taking Mark's advice, the runner in lane 3 examines his shoelaces. Eddie, meanwhile, has his eyes fixed on the starter at the other end of the track. With the runner in lane 3 physically set, but not mentally ready to run, the buzzer sounds. Eddie, as he saw the starter's foot move, was out of the blocks first. The runner in lane 3, who was distracted by Mark, was clearly out of the blocks last. This is the runner that had a time close to Eddie's during the qualifying heats. His slowness out of the blocks, which came as a great surprise, is noticed by all who are watching. Leaving the blocks last on a 40-yard race is a sure sign you will lose, for there is not sufficient distance to make up any lost time. At 10 yards, Eddie and Mark are nearly tied, with Eddie having a slight lead. A group of three runners, which includes Johnson, are a few steps behind. The guy in lane three, who was distracted by Mark, is in last place. Eddie, remembering he told Kathy that he is the fastest person in the arena, must now deliver on his claim. Eddie, somehow finding some extra energy, is beginning to take a slightly greater lead over Mark. Halfway through the race, Eddie is clearly ahead. Mark, however, is still very close behind. Johnson is still in the middle of the pack of three. The runner in lane three is catching up to the pack, but is too far behind to catch the leaders. At 30 yards, Eddie will be the clear winner. It appears Mark will take second place. Third place, however, cannot be called with 10 yards remaining. Eddie, who is too focused on the race, does not see Kathy, just beyond the finish line, watching his every step. At the finish line, Eddie, knowing he has ran his fastest race ever, crosses the line first. Mark crosses second, a mere 1 yard behind Eddie. When the next group of runners approach the finish line, third place is too close to call. As the runners cross the line, several flashes go off to catch it on film. The last place runner, 3 yards behind the photo finish crowd, finally crosses the finish line more than 1 second after Eddie. The officials meet, examining the photographic evidence to find out who has earned third place. Some of the coaches want to see the photos, which they will, but won't be able to until after third place is called. Meanwhile, the guy who ran in lane three, distracted before the race by Mark, has some words to exchange. The lane three guy alleges to Mark, "You screwed up the whole race, you idiot. It needs to be run over." Mark simply tells the guy, "Hey, it ain't my fault you can't run. Maybe you should practice sometime." Mark's comment did not sit well with the lane three guy, who tells Mark, "Yeah, well, I'll kick your ass." Mark laughs quite audibly and responds, "Yeah, right. I'd love to see that." The lane three guy walks away, knowing that Mark has beaten him three times. Once before the race, again during the race, and finally, after the race. The officials and coaches were too busy waiting to see who got third place to notice the exchange between Mark and the loser of the race. The officials have made their decision. The coaches are now allowed to examine the photos. After careful examination of the results, none of the coaches object. Separating third and fourth place is only a few inches, which is common in this type of race. The head timekeeper takes the pleasure of declaring the final times. He announces Edward Boganskaya, 4.4 seconds. Mark Svoboda, 4.5 seconds. Lucius Clay, 4.6 seconds. Eric Johnson, 4.65 seconds. Alan Williams, 4.65 seconds. John Brady, 5.1 seconds. Paying close attention is Brady, who now knows the name of his new opponent, both on the track and off. Paying close attention to Eddie is Kathy, who congratulates Eddie for his awesome victory. Next up for Eddie is the 4x440 relay. The 4x440 relay is always the last event to be run. This is because the best runners are usually assigned to this relay race. Scheduling the race last gives the runners the most time to recover from their other events. For now, the attention is turned to another relay, the Mile Medley, which is owned by the veterans this year. In the Mile Medley, there are two legs of 220 yards, one leg of 440 yards, and one leg of 880 yards. Mahoney gets the pleasure of running the 880-yard leg of this race. Eddie, however, pays absolutely no attention to the Mile Medley relay. Taking a seat on the bench to rest for a while, he has his first chance to observe what is happening as a spectator. Eddie hears the coaches telling the runners to run faster. Being a runner himself, he can assure the coaches that the runners are running as fast as they can. He can equally assure the coaches that the runners don't hear them screaming because they are too focused on running the race. Eddie also sees no less than 36 people with stopwatches. One of them is Kathy, who seems to be paying more attention to Eddie on the bench than the race. Eddie catches Kathy looking in his direction a couple of times, and each time she is smiling. Eddie is joined by Mark, Braden, and Johnson, who have all completed their individual events for the day. Braden tells the group, "I won the 440. I took first, second, and third place." Braden was joking, for he only took first place. Mark points out to Braden, "The only way you can do that, bro, is if you're the only one in the race." Braden thinks about that for a second and fires back, "I am the only one in the race. No one can beat me." They all have a laugh at Braden's comeback. Johnson mentions to his buddies, "I got second place in the 220. Some of these guys are fast." While they are having their conversation, Kathy walks up to the 4x440 relay team. Showing them what is on her clipboard, she tells them, "Your race is after this one. This is what you'll be up against." Kathy also mentions, "The times next to their names are not exact. But the times are their best as far as we know." As they look over the list, Mark points to a line and says, "McCrutchen again." So, that's where they put him. Eddie also sees another name, who is familiar to Mark. Eddie points to the runner's name and says, "Yeah, and there's Brady, from the 40-yard dash." Kathy adds some valuable information, informing the 4x440 relay team, "The good news is Brady can only run a 60-second quarter mile, and that's on a good day." Braden asks, "Do we know what order they go in?" Kathy, who acquired the information earlier, replies, "The order on the list is the order they go in. Braden, the lead man, will be up against McCutcheon and Brady." Mark asks Kathy, "Can we change our order?" Braden interjects, asking, "Why?" Mark replies, "It's not every day that I'll get to kick McCrutchen's and Brady's ass in one race." Kathy tells Mark, "You'd have to ask Mr. Fraser about that." Kathy tells the team, "Good luck," placing her hand gently on Eddie's back as she walks away. The relay team approaches Mr. Fraser to see if they can change the order. Mark asks, "Mr. Fraser, can we change our order in the race?" Mr. Fraser replies, "What do you mean?" Mark asks Mr. Fraser, "Can I be the lead man and Braden the anchor?" Mr. Fraser asks the expected question in the form of a statement, "Tell me why." Mark explains, "McCrutchen and Brady are the lead men for the other teams. I want to kick both of their asses at once, in one race." Mr. Fraser smiles and laughs, and replies, "Sure, go ahead. But you'd better kick their ass." Mr. Fraser explains to Braden, "Hold the baton, and give it to Mark right before the race begins." Mark curiously asks, "Why?" Mr. Fraser tells Mark, "They can make last-minute changes as well, so you don't want to give them the chance." Mr. Fraser's reaction to their request was priceless. He also raised the energy level of the relay team, who is now even more fired up. The officials tell the runners of the 4x440 relay teams to prepare for the final event. The teams meet at the starting line, with Braden holding the baton. Also holding batons are McCutcheon and the veteran Brady. As McCutcheon, Brady, and some unknown guy from Madison High School all enter the track, Braden tosses the baton to Mark, who also enters the track. Mark points to McCutcheon's shoes, invoking a little deja vu in his mind. McCutcheon remembers Mark well from last year's meet. Mark also points to Brady with his baton and stares right into his eyes. Mark knows from Kathy that Brady can only run 440 yards in the lower 60-second range. Mark's display of playfulness, confidence, and a relaxed attitude can only distract the opponents. The starter tells the runners, "On your marks." The runners get into position. The next command seems like it is delayed. Sure enough, McCutcheon is not positioned yet, and is checking his shoelaces. The starter announces, "Set." With the runners ready to go, the buzzer sounds. Mark leaves the starting blocks with enough speed to convince everyone he has something to prove. Casually looking at the runners, it is clear that Mark is in the lead. In second place is Brady, who has a score to settle. McCutcheon, in third place, has many scores to settle with Mark. After the first lap, at 220 yards, Mark is clearly ahead of the other three runners. For the remainder of the first leg, the relative position of the runners remains the same, but the gap between each runner widens. Brady is desperately trying to catch Mark during the last lap, but simply can't. Mark passes the baton to Johnson and leaves the track, returning to the starting point to join the other runners. After Brady and McCutcheon leave the track, they also return to the starting point. Brady looks at Mark and has no words to say this time. Braden, however, has words for everyone to hear. Braden, giving Mark a high five, impulsively blurts out, "You kicked their ass, big time." McCutcheon gets up the nerve to say to the tribe, "The race ain't over yet." Braden, reassuring everyone around, exclaims, "Oh yeah, it is. It was over when it started." Back on the track, Johnson is maintaining a solid lead. After the first lap is completed, the runner on McCutcheon's team passes the runner on Brady's team. This is not good news for Johnson, for he is next on the runner's list to be passed. On the back straightaway of the last lap, the runner is gaining on Johnson, but, with about 100 yards to go, Johnson sprints to the transition zone. Johnson delivers the baton to Eddie, and is the first runner in his leg to complete the transition. Eddie leaves the transition zone running with the same speed with which he won the 40-yard dash. Eddie widens his lead over the other runners, who seem to be bunching up halfway through the leg. Another positional change occurs between Riverdale and Centerville, but all attention is focused on Eddie. With the rest of the weekend to recover, Eddie sprints the last 100 yards. With Braden in his sights, Eddie hands off the baton, quickly looking back to see where the other runners are. Eddie knew, when he saw the runner in second place just coming out of the curve, the race has already been wrapped up. Just as Eddie joins his other team members, Brady asks Eddie, "Where did you guys come from? We haven't seen you before." Brady, a senior, does not remember Eddie, Mark, Braden, or Johnson from any previous meets. Mark, deciding to be the spokesman for the group, answers, telling Brady, "We're freshmen. This is our first meet. It was good practice." McCutcheon, a little distance away, is eavesdropping on their conversation. McCutcheon mumbles to a teammate, "Four more years of this shit to come. Oh, wonderful." Braden, with a comfortable lead, is taking no chances. He remembered Mr. Fraser told him to kick their ass. Well, Mr. Fraser told the whole team to kick their ass, but kicking ass is somehow Braden's specialty. On the back straightaway, it becomes apparent that Braden has more than a 100-yard lead, or greater than 10 seconds. After the first lap, Mr. Fraser knows Braden has the race all wrapped up. As Braden is on his last lap, Kathy tells Eddie, "All of you ran a sub-60. It looks like Axel Braden will too." Eddie asks Kathy, "What was my time?" Kathy replies, "You can't tell exactly because of the handoff, but it was definitely in the 54-second range." The focus shifts toward the finish line as Braden comes around the final curve. Braden crosses the finish line while the runner, who is in second place, is still in the final curve. In second place is Riverdale, which is Brady's team. They are followed by Centerville, which is McCutcheon's team. In last place, from Madison High, is a relay team that ran as if it was the first relay race they've ever ran together. With the meet now over, the officials make the announcement regarding the final score. Mr. Fraser is ecstatic when he hears his team won the meet, but he suspected that would be the case halfway through the meet. The meet announcer instructs the spectators to move to the sides of the bleachers, opening up the center area for the runners. The official then tells the teams to have a seat on the bleachers for the awards ceremony. In just a few minutes, the winners will receive their medals. With more than 125 athletes in the arena, it takes several minutes to get everyone where they should be. Standing behind the podium, the meet announcer addresses the runners, saying, "When I call your name, I want you to walk up to your coach and receive your medal. You will stand behind your coach after you receive your award." The group of athletes standing behind their coach is the coach's reward for the meet. To both the left and right of the podium stand two coaches, spread out in the center of the oval track. Kathy, Paula, and Barbara stand with Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday to the far left side of the oval. The official begins the announcements. In the 40-yard dash, first place goes to Edward Boganskaya. "Come up, please." Eddie walks up to Mr. Fraser as an official hands the medal to Mr. Fraser. He continues calling the names of the winners: in second place, Mark Svoboda, and in third place, Lucius Clay. The meet clerk distributes the medals to the appropriate coach. The meet announcer then tells the coaches, "You may now drape the medals." Mr. Fraser hands the first place medal to Kathy. Simultaneously, Kathy drapes Eddie and Mr. Fraser drapes Mark. Some people notice that Kathy does a little more than draping the medal around Eddie's neck. She places her hands gently on his shoulders and is very slow to remove them. The runners then stand behind Mr. Fraser, Mr. Zunday, and their three team assistants. Mark whispers to Eddie, "Bro, she likes you." As the awards continue, Mr. Fraser's group is getting to be, by far, the largest. By the time the medals are to be distributed for the 4x440 relay event, Eddie's entire tribe is behind Mr. Fraser. Bobby B placed third in the shot put. Mitchell placed second in the 880-yard run and placed second in the mile. Johnson placed second in the 220-yard dash. Braden placed first in the 440-yard dash, letting everyone in the arena know that he won the gold medal in that event. This is not bad for freshmen, who were competing against mostly juniors and seniors. As for the rest of the team, the majority of the Northside track athletes are now standing behind the Northside coaches. The official then announces the result of the 4x440 relay. In first place, for Northside, Axel Braden, Eric Johnson, Edward Boganskaya, and Mark Svoboda, which was the order in which they were supposed to run. With everyone looking at the bleachers waiting for the winners to come forward, the relay team, each already decorated with a medal, steps out from behind Mr. Fraser. The official announces the second and third place winners of the event. Second place goes to Riverdale, and third place to Centerville. The official instructs the coaches to drape the medals. Mr. Fraser hands one medal to Barbara, one to Paula, one to Kathy, and keeps one for himself to drape. He then tells the girls, "Pick somebody," referring to a runner to drape. It did not take much time for Kathy to end up standing behind Eddie again. Kathy got behind Eddie so fast, it's a wonder that she's not on the track team herself. Mr. Fraser and his assistants proudly drape the four runners. With the meet now over, the winners shake the hands of their opponents. The center of the oval track serves as the winner's circle. Eddie and his tribe mingle with the crowd for a few minutes. Some of the runners who are on the bleachers come down to congratulate the winners. After a while, the crowd thins out, and the visiting teams head to their buses. On the back row of the bleachers, watching the meet, was Mr. Moreno, the football coach. Mr. Moreno was more interested in looking for a potential running back, wide receiver, or free safety than in the outcome of the meet. During the 4x440 relay, Mr. Moreno was visualizing the runners running with a football rather than a baton. He had his own clipboard and was silently taking names. Mr. Moreno quietly slips out of the arena, unnoticed by all. Eddie and his tribe have their own celebration in the locker room. This was their first big meet, and each of them walked away with at least one medal. Braden, showing off his medals, exclaims, "I finally got some proof that I kicked ass." Bobby B, who took third place in the shot put, is very excited. Mark comments, "Imagine what it'll be like when we're seniors." A comment is then heard around the corner in the locker room, "If you ever get to be seniors." Eddie looks around the corner, as Mark asks, "Who said that?" Eddie looks around the corner again, pretending not to know the team member making the comment, replies, "I don't know who he is." Mark, looking around the corner, says, "I think that's Mahoney." Eddie, getting Mark's drift, questions Mark and everyone else, "Oh, so that's Mahoney." Eddie and Mark have been ignoring Mahoney and pretending not to know who he is. Mahoney has not learned that messing with the tribe is something you just don't do. The locker room eventually empties out, and everyone goes home to have lunch and a relaxing afternoon. Eddie and Mark, who rode their bicycles to the meet today, ride home together. As Eddie and Mark ride down the parking lot to the road, Kathy comes out of the front of the school hoping to find Eddie and talk with him for a while. She has been hanging out in the hallway, waiting for Eddie to come out of the locker room. Seeing Eddie off in a distance, riding away, Kathy is deeply saddened because she really wanted to see him. What she didn't know is that Eddie's and Mark's bicycles were locked up in the locker room, and Eddie and Mark left out of the back door near the gym. Her next chance to see Eddie will be Monday morning, if she can even find him before practice. Kathy starts her walk home alone, thinking all about today's meet on the way. As Monday arrives, word gets around school that the team did well in the track meet. The wrestling team also had a good meet this weekend, with Gump beating his opponent in under a minute. After school today, Mr. Fraser will go over the meet and again congratulate the winners. But in the meantime, it's back to academics. During every class change, Kathy searches the halls for Eddie to at least say hi, but has no such luck today. Being a sophomore, Kathy's classes aren't usually in the same area of the school as Eddie's. After school, it's back to track practice for the team. Once the team is assembled in the arena, Mr. Fraser instructs them to have a seat on the bleachers. Eddie and his tribe sits near the end, closest to the metal stairway. Mr. Fraser, addressing the team, begins, "We had an awesome meet this weekend. I want to bring your attention to a few items. The first is in the individual events. We took more gold and silver medals than any of the other teams. And we took more medals overall than all the other teams combined. I am proud of every single one of you." As Mr. Fraser continues speaking, Kathy, Barbara, and Paula walk down the metal stairway. Barbara walks up to Mr. Fraser and hands him a piece of paper, as Kathy and Paula have a seat on the bleachers. Kathy takes a seat next to Eddie, with Paula joining her. Mr. Fraser continues, "Barbara has given me a list with your approximate split times in the relay races." Mr. Fraser gives the team some interesting news, revealing, "The first thing I want to address regarding the relays is that some of your handoffs need a little work. So, that's what many of you will be working on today." He then continues, "Now for your times. In the mile medley, Bell, your 220 was about 32 seconds, not bad." Mr. Fraser continues announcing the split times, with everyone listening for their name. While Mr. Fraser continues to announce the times, Kathy places her hand on Eddie's thigh, whispering to him, "Don't worry. Your times were seriously awesome, and Mr. Fraser has some good news for you." Belle, who is seated in the row behind Eddie, but a little farther down, catches a glimpse of Kathy placing her hand on Eddie's thigh. Belle whispers to Mahoney, "He's already got your events. Now, he's going after the girl you like." Mahoney looks to his left and turns about as red as a ripe tomato. Kathy, knowing what is on the paper that Barbara gave to Mr. Fraser, whispers to Eddie, "Here's your time coming up now." Mahoney, catching a glimpse of the whisper, can only presume what Kathy whispered in Eddie's ear. Mr. Fraser then announces, "And in the 4x440 relay, everyone ran a sub-60-second time." He then gives the approximate times, "Mark, you ran a 54. Johnson, you ran a 55. Eddie, a 53. A 53. Can you believe it? And Braden, you ran a 54. Mr. Fraser tells the team, Braden said this team was going to kick ass, and they delivered. I'm very, very proud of this relay team. Mr. Fraser finishes by making the announcement, in 8 weeks, there will be a state-level competition in the Coliseum. He gives some further details, telling the team, in order to be invited to this meet, you must first qualify. In order to qualify, you must simply deliver a qualifying time. A qualifying time is defined by the sport organizers, which is usually somewhere in the upper 3 percentile, based upon the statistics for the last few years. Then, Mr. Fraser gives some good news, exclaiming, some of you have already qualified. Kathy whispers again in Eddie's ear, that's the good news I was telling you about. You're going to the state invitational meet. Eddie whispers to Kathy, wow. I wasn't expecting that. Eddie's whisper to Kathy does not go unnoticed by Mahoney. Mr. Fraser then tells the team to stretch and take a warm-up lap before practice begins. During the warm-up lap, Mahoney runs up next to Eddie and gives him a warning, telling him, stay away from Kathy. She's mine. Eddie replies to the buffoon, shut up, loser. The only thing that's yours is last place. Eddie starts running faster, not wanting to listen to Mahoney's babbling. Mahoney chases him, trying to prove that he is not a loser, but is unable to catch Eddie. After the warm-up lap, Mr. Fraser assigns everyone to a group and gives them their workout drills for today. Kathy, Barbara, and Paula will be helping Mr. Fraser with today's practice. They will be recording times and working with the runners, giving them some ideas to help improve their performance. With so many qualifiers and the state invitational meet coming up, Mr. Fraser wants the best team he can deliver. Mahoney, whose best performance this past weekend was 3rd place in the mile medley relay, is assigned to a group that will be working on their handoffs. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson are assigned to a group that will be running sprints for time. Mitchell will be running non-stop for the next hour with the other distance men. Bobby B. will head up the metal staircase to the weight room, joining the others in the shot put event. Mr. Fraser assigns each one of the 3 girls to work with a particular group. Mr. Fraser, himself, will be working with the runners who need help with their handoffs, since he is an expert in this area. Mr. Fraser assigns Kathy to work with the sprinters. Barbara, being a distance runner herself, will be working with the distance runners. Paula, who is new to the team of assistants, will be trading off between helping both Kathy and Mr. Fraser. Mr. Fraser instructs Kathy to work on getting the runners to improve their start out of the blocks. 2 things are important when running a sprint. The first is getting out of the blocks as fast as possible. The second is getting to your top speed as fast as possible, preferably in less than 4 steps after leaving the blocks. These 2 factors are often the difference between 1st and 2nd place. Today, Kathy will be reviewing with the sprinters how to accomplish that goal. Kathy has the sprinters prepare as if they are going to run a sprint. She picks 6 of the runners and tells them to pick a lane. Included in the 6 are Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden. Kathy explains, the drill is to only run 10 yards after the buzzer sounds. Me and Paula will be watching to see who is the fastest out of the blocks. Paula is equipped with a Polaroid camera to document each of the runners' start. Kathy also tells the runners, Mr. Fraser says you should be at your top speed 3 or 4 steps out of the blocks. The runners are in their lanes and ready to go. Kathy announces, on your marks, followed by, set. After sounding the buzzer, the runners are out of the blocks as fast as they are able. Simultaneously, Paula snaps a photograph just after the buzzer goes off. The runners run 10 yards, as Kathy makes a note of who was ahead at 5 yards. After the photograph is ready, Kathy and Paula are ready for the next group. The next group steps up to the blocks and performs the same drill. Gathering around Paula, as she is holding the photograph, the runners can easily see who was out of the blocks fast and who was not. Eddie's group gets another turn. But before they perform the drill, Kathy will explain the proper foot placement in the blocks. Calling Eddie to step up to the blocks, Kathy will use him for an example. Kathy explains to the group, the position of the front starting block should be 1.5 to 2 times the length of your shoe from the starting line. Telling Eddie to get in the set position, Kathy adjusts the front block to Eddie's optimal position. Kathy tells the runners, when it's your turn, memorize the setting on the front starting block, and don't forget it. Kathy then tells the group that the position of the rear block depends on the height of the runner, which is generally 2.5 feet to 3 feet from the starting line. Kathy, holding onto Eddie's rear leg, adjusts the rear block to his optimal setting. Kathy tells the runners, the front leg should be bent to 90 degrees at your knee, and the back leg should be at 120 degrees when you are in the set position. She tells the runners, when it's your turn, you will look at the setting of the rear block and memorize that number too. The last things Kathy checks for are that Eddie's hands are 3 inches in front of his shoulders and 3 inches outside of his shoulders, and that his waist is bent at 45 degrees. Kathy comes over to Eddie and places his hands in the correct position, which may have been a fraction of an inch off. Eddie's hands were actually in the correct position, but Kathy seems to be giving Eddie a lot of extra attention today. Meanwhile, watching Eddie and Kathy carefully from the oval track is Mahoney, who is performing relay drills. Mahoney, who is about to receive the baton, has his eyes fixed on Kathy positioning Eddie's hands rather than the runner behind him. Next to Mahoney is another runner, also about to receive a baton. Mahoney, still looking at Kathy with her hands on Eddie, catches the runner about to hand off to him in his peripheral vision. Mahoney then comes back to reality and realizes he should have started running a second or two ago. As Mahoney starts running, the runner handing off has to drastically slow his pace and trips over Mahoney during the delivery. They both go down on the track, taking down with them 2 other runners who were also in the middle of a handoff. With 4 runners down on the track, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle. Mr. Fraser, who saw exactly what happened, is not too happy at the moment. Back at the sprinting drills, everyone turns to see what happened. Mark, who usually has some interesting commentary, states the obvious, saying, well, that didn't go exactly as planned. Braden replies, yeah, I'd say. There's Mahoney and Ambrosini thinking like they're playing a game of kill the man with the baton. The runners lay on the track for a while and are slow to get up. Kathy instructs Eddie to get ready again, making sure he is properly positioned. She tells Eddie, on your marks, which he already is. She then tells Eddie, set. With Eddie perfectly positioned, Kathy sounds the buzzer, and Eddie leaves the blocks. After sprinting 10 yards, he returns to the starting line. Kathy asks Eddie, do you notice any difference? Eddie replies, yeah. Big time. I'm definitely out of the blocks faster and stronger. Kathy then tells the group, it also looked like Eddie may have been up to his top speed faster. Kathy tells the group, I want the first group to set the blocks using the information I just went over. Paula and I will help you. Then, we'll run another drill. Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden, who are in the first group, get ready for the drill. Kathy and Paula help each runner with their optimal block position. Once everyone has their blocks set, Kathy tells them to memorize their block settings. When they are ready, Kathy announces, on your marks. She then announces, set. Once everyone thinks they are in the set position, Kathy checks all the runners, making sure they are actually in their optimal position. After sounding the buzzer, the runners are all out of the blocks. Paula snaps another photograph after the buzzer goes off. The runners run their requisite 10 yards and return to the starting line. Kathy asks, okay, now. How was that? Everyone agrees that they were able to leave the blocks a little faster and stronger. Kathy tells the runners, "Check your blocks and make sure you have your setting numbers memorized." She then goes through the procedure with the rest of the sprinters. Kathy takes Paula aside, telling her, "It looks like Mark needs a little extra help with the blocks." Paula, who seems quite naive, tells Kathy, "Actually, it looks like he's doing really good." Kathy, whispering to Paula, explains to her, "He's looking more at you than the blocks, or anything else. Don't you see it?" Paula responds, "I just thought he was paying attention to what we were telling them." Kathy, again explaining the facts to Paula, whispers, "Yeah, he's paying attention, all right. To you. He knows how to run. That's obvious. He doesn't need much help in that area." Paula finally concedes and tells Kathy, "Okay, I'm going to watch him and see." While the other sprinters are getting set up, Eddie thinks back to the meet this past weekend. No one really paid too much attention to the way their blocks were set up. Many of the runners, Eddie recalls, just used the blocks where they were already positioned. He also wonders how Kathy knows so much about the art of sprinting. Eddie, who previously relied on pure strength and speed, quickly realizes that sprinting is a little more complicated than he originally thought. At the end of practice, Mr. Fraser has the team sit on the bleachers. As usual, he goes over the good and the bad. The good news today is that the sprinters have all improved their starts. Mr. Fraser, after examining the photographic evidence, announces, "It looks like Eddie, Mark, and Braden are the fastest out of the blocks." Mr. Fraser also tells the team, "Mitchell, it looks like you're ready to run a marathon." Today, Mr. Fraser has an abundance of good news and compliments for the team. The only bad news the runners heard is about the relay handoffs. Mr. Fraser announces, "Some of you still need a little help with your handoffs." He then mentions, "And Mahoney, make sure you have collision insurance next time you get on the track." Everyone laughs at Mr. Fraser's comment, except for Mahoney, of course. Mr. Fraser, however, did not say this to be funny, but to make sure that a collision like that never happens again. Mr. Fraser dismisses the team, and they all head to the locker room. As Eddie leaves the locker room, he walks toward the front door of the school. Kathy is sitting on a bench in the school lobby waiting for him. Kathy, standing up and walking with him, says, "That was a really good workout." Eddie replies, "Yeah. I learned a lot today. You're really good." Kathy softly asks Eddie, "Are you headed home?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I'm walking today." Hoping that was the case, Kathy replies, "I'll walk with you." Today, Kathy finally gets her time alone with Eddie. As Eddie and Kathy walk out together, Kathy asks Eddie, "Okay, now. I have to ask. You're a freshman, and you're faster than all the seniors. How is that? What's up?" Eddie, who wasn't even sure he'd make the track team, answers, "I don't know. I ride my bicycle a lot, work out, and take some vitamins. I have some weights at home, a bench, and a squat rack that I sort of built myself." Kathy tells Eddie, "Wow. You'll have to show it to me sometime." It is clear to anyone, just by looking at Kathy's body, that she also works out. Kathy, who is getting really interested, asks Eddie, "Where do you ride your bicycle to?" Eddie replies, "Well, over the summer, I ride to the beach a couple of times during the week." Kathy exclaims, "Wow. That's like a long ride." Eddie replies, "It's only 11 miles. It's really not too far." Also liking the beach, Kathy tells Eddie, "I really like the beach too, but I never thought about riding my bicycle there." Eddie asks, "Do you ride a lot?" Kathy replies, "Mostly to get to my friends' houses." Eddie and Kathy have a nice conversation on their way home. Kathy's house, which is around the corner from Bobby B, is on the way to Eddie's house. When they arrive at Kathy's house, Kathy tells Eddie, "Well, this is my stop." Before she goes inside, Eddie asks Kathy, "Do I get to know the last name of the girl I just walked home?" Kathy replies, "Oh, yeah. Well, to start with, my real name is not Kathy." Eddie asks the obvious, "Wow. Then, what is your name?" Kathy replies, "Katerina Karakova." Pausing for a moment, Eddie repeats to Kathy, "Katerina Karakova. Wow. That's the most beautiful name I've ever heard." Giving Eddie a hug, Kathy leaves absolutely no mistake about her level of interest in him. She expresses to Eddie, "I've enjoyed our walk. See you tomorrow." Eddie replies, "Yeah. That would be really nice, Katerina Karakova." Kathy smiles, gives Eddie another hug, and walks up to her house. Eddie continues walking home, thinking that high school has just gotten a lot better. The next day before school starts, Kathy, sitting on a bench in the school lobby, anxiously waits for Eddie to arrive. As she is waiting, Mahoney comes up to Kathy and strikes up a conversation. Mahoney's dialogue goes about as smooth as 40 grit sandpaper on silk. Mahoney, who finally gets up the nerve to ask Kathy out on a date, asks, "Do you want to go and get some pizza with me after track practice today?" Kathy declines, telling Mahoney, "You shouldn't be eating pizza when you're in training." Kathy then sees Eddie walk into the school building. She abruptly ends her conversation with Mahoney, telling him, "I'm sorry. I got to go." Mahoney, a bit puzzled by Kathy abruptly ending their conversation, watches as she runs across the lobby. Kathy runs up to Eddie. She takes him by the arm and locks elbows with him. As they walk through the lobby, Kathy tells Eddie, "Good morning. I've missed you." Kathy's warm good morning leaves absolutely no doubt as to her intentions. Kathy walks Eddie to class as Mahoney tries to pull the dagger out of his chest. Walking Eddie down the hall, Kathy does so in a way that is noticed by all. When they arrive at Eddie's classroom, Kathy walks in with him in a way that advertises to everyone that Eddie is now with her. Kathy tells Eddie, "See you after school." Eddie replies, "Yeah. Definitely." Walking over to the window, Eddie takes his seat near Mark, Braden, and Bobby B. Mark asks Eddie, "So, what's up with Kathy?" Not wanting to become the center of attention, Eddie simply replies, "I think she likes me." Braden says, "Yeah, bro. Tell us something we don't know." Wendy brilliantly stays out of the conversation, seeing it as guy talk. Mark comments, "Yeah, she likes you all right. Everyone can see that. It's been obvious since the first time she met you." Braden, who is very observant, tells Mark, "Yeah. And I've noticed that Paula has been looking at you a lot more recently." Mark asks, "Really?" "She has." This is good news to Mark, who has had his eyes on Paula for a while. Braden tells Mark, "Yeah. She's got her hands all over your ass when she's helping you with the blocks. Don't tell me you don't see it." Miss Star walks into the classroom, sparing Eddie from the game of 20 questions with his friends. Mark, however, wanted the conversation to continue, as he wanted to hear more. If he is lucky, Mark might hear more from his buddies during the next class. The next class is science class, specifically earth science. The group walks into class and takes their usual seat near the window. Somehow, for Eddie, just staring out at an open field is sometimes more interesting than listening to some of the crap they teach in school. Mr. Lambert, the teacher, tells everyone to have a seat so he can begin. Today's discussion is about the weather, specifically lightning. During the lecture, Mark whispers to Eddie, "So, honestly, do you think Paula likes me?" Eddie asks Mark, "Honestly?" Mark replies, "Yeah." Eddie drops the bombshell, telling Mark, "Bro. It's obvious to everyone but you. She does, no doubt." Mark replies, asking, "You ain't shitting me, are you?" Eddie replies, "No, bro. She's looking at you all the time, and she has her hands all over you every chance she gets." Mr. Lambert hears Eddie talking to Mark during class. With all of his craftiness, Mr. Lambert asks Eddie, "Eddie, I presume you are discussing my lecture with Mark. Did you have a question, or can I clear something up for you?" Eddie replies, "Yes." Mr. Lambert replies, "Okay, Eddie, what is it?" Clearing up any doubt that he was listening to Mr. Lambert, Eddie replies to him, "You said lightning strikes the highest thing in the area, right?" Mr. Lambert confirms, "Yes, that is correct. Is there a question?" Eddie then asks his question, "So, if lightning strikes the highest thing in the area, that means you should not smoke pot during a thunderstorm, right?" The whole class bursts out in laughter, including Mr. Lambert, who desperately tries to hide his own amusement. Mark, with an inside joke, adds, "Or take some of that psycho tubing." Eddie, Braden, Bobby B., and anyone else who remembers that incident from health class last year, begins to crack up even more. Mr. Lambert, realizing the best thing to do is just let the laughter run its course, has a problem containing his own laughter. After 5 minutes or so, the class is finally back to order, and Mr. Lambert continues his lecture. "One thing was learned today. You can't outsmart Eddie on the track or in the classroom. At the end of the day, it's back to track practice for the team. Practice is uneventful, other than Mahoney giving Eddie the occasional evil eye. Eddie has no knowledge of what transpired between Mahoney and Kathy before he got to school this morning. During practice, Mahoney asks Ambrosini, how much did Eddie bench in gym class that day? Ambrosini, who cannot remember, replies, something like 250 pounds. The rumor is that he can do a lot more. Mahoney tells Ambrosini, those four guys are animals. Mahoney was asking because he is attempting to compare Eddie's strength with his own. Mahoney quickly realizes he comes up short in that category too. At the end of today's practice session, Kathy asks Eddie, do you want to go get pizza after practice today? Eddie replies, sure. Let me just call my mom and tell her not to wait for me for dinner. Kathy, happy as she can be, says, okay then. It's a date. Kathy and Eddie's conversation, of course, is overheard by Mahoney, who is now pulling the second dagger out of his chest today. Mahoney, who tries to forget about it, keeps thinking about Kathy's earlier comment, you shouldn't be eating pizza when you're in training. Eddie and Kathy walk to the pizzeria, which is only a minor detour from their walk home. The team members in the front of the school see Eddie and Kathy as they walk away, holding hands. Since it is cold out, they are walking close together. No one really thinks too much about Kathy and Eddie walking together, except for Mahoney, who is red with envy. Kathy and Eddie talk about track on the way to dinner. Eddie asks Kathy, so, how did you learn all about setting the blocks? Kathy tells him, oh, that's an easy one. My dad is an exercise science professor over at the university, which means he's basically a glorified gym teacher. My dad, Mr. Fraser, and Mr. Zunde are friends. Kathy again tells Eddie, I'm still amazed how fast you are. Not only you, but your friends. Eddie says, oh, you mean the tribe? Kathy, in wonderment, asks, the tribe? Eddie responds, yeah. Me, Mark, Braden, and Bobby B. Eddie explains, Anthony Ambrosini said to me in gym class one day during a football game, what kind of tribe are you running? Since then, we've been known as the tribe. Kathy tells Eddie, I like that, the tribe. In an afterthought, Eddie adds, oh, yeah. Johnson and Mitchell are also in the tribe. Once they get to the pizzeria, shop talk is over, and the conversation shifts more toward other topics. Following a 2-hour dinner at the pizzeria, Kathy and Eddie begin to walk home. The sun set a while ago, so the temperature is quickly dropping. After walking down the main road, they turn right onto a dark road leading toward Kathy's house. Being cold and dark outside, the road is mostly deserted, with an occasional car driving by. As they get within view of Kathy's house, Kathy tells Eddie, "I really liked our day." Eddie replies, "Yeah, me too." Kathy stops, turns toward Eddie, and asks, "What are we doing tomorrow?" Before Eddie can even answer the question, Kathy puts her arms around his neck and tells him, "I don't want to go. Make the night last longer." Kathy touches her lips to Eddie, surprising him with a little more than a goodnight kiss. Eddie and Kathy embrace each other again, this time longer, as they hug each other tightly. As they finish their walk home, both know something changed just then. When they get to Kathy's house, Kathy sighs and says, "Well, here's my stop again. We should have taken the long way home." Eddie tells Kathy, "This has been my favorite day ever." Kathy and Eddie walk up to the door and say goodnight to each other. As Kathy goes inside, Eddie walks to the sidewalk and makes his way home. The next day at school, Kathy is sitting on the bench in the school lobby again waiting for Eddie to arrive. When Eddie walks in, Kathy runs up to meet him. Kathy takes Eddie's arm and walks him to class, getting there a little early this time. They talk in the hallway for a while. But as the halls empty out, Kathy has to get to class or she'll be late. In front of the open classroom door, Kathy gives Eddie a quick kiss before she heads down the hall. Kathy, in essence, made it a point to let everyone around know that Eddie is now unavailable. Eddie walks into the classroom and takes his usual seat. Braden, the only one to make a comment, says to Eddie, "That looks like a little more than just liking you." Eddie, who has his mind elsewhere, just replies, "I guess so." Meanwhile, Mark is busy copying an assignment he failed to complete for the next class. Mark is hoping for the conversation to come back to Paula, but there is no such luck today. Bobby B., just staring out the window, is not even fully awake yet. Eddie, the only energetic one in the group, cannot wait until school is over so he can see Kathy again. For the next few weeks, the team practices several times a week. The track meets, which are primarily held on the weekends, all go well. Eddie and his tribe gain a lot of confidence over the season, especially in the 4x400 relay. With the state invitational meet in the near future, Mr. Fraser and his team assistants give some additional attention to the athletes who have been invited to the event. Eddie still does some extra training at home and is taking the vitamins and amino acids that were recommended by the doctor. Kathy has also been spending a lot of time with Eddie, but not just in the capacity of helping out with the team. One afternoon after school, Eddie invites Kathy over to see his workout area. Kathy has been wanting to see it, and today is her chance. It's not so much that she wants to see the workout area, but that she wants to be with Eddie. Eddie and Kathy walk home from school and stop by Kathy's house. They walk inside, and she drops her stuff off. Kathy tells Eddie, "I'll be right back," as she runs upstairs for a few minutes. As Kathy comes downstairs, Eddie looks and sees that she changed into workout clothes. Eddie, stating the obvious, says to Kathy, "You changed." Kathy replies, "Yeah. You didn't think I was just going to look at your equipment. We're using it." Eddie, surprised that Kathy wanted to work out, is definitely excited. Kathy gets her jacket, and they head out the door. When they get to Eddie's house, Eddie introduces Kathy to his mother. After a short conversation, Eddie's mom asks Kathy, "Would you like to stay for dinner?" Without any hesitation, Kathy replies, "Oh, I'd love to. Let me just call my mom and make sure it's okay." As Kathy is calling her mom, Eddie is thinking that he'll have more time to be with Kathy if she can stay. After Kathy hangs up the phone, she says to Eddie and his mom, "Well, the answer is..." And after a long pause, she says, with excitement, "I can stay." Eddie's mom smiles and says, "Okay. I'll set another plate." Eddie and Kathy head downstairs to work out. Kathy, looking at Eddie's bench and squat rack, says, "Wow. Nice setup." Eddie asks, "What do you want to work on first?" Kathy replies, "We're doing bench first. Do you think you can keep up with me?" Eddie smiles and replies, "Probably not. But I'll give it a try." This is something Eddie really likes about Kathy. She is very assertive and has no problem expressing herself. Eddie loads the bar with 50 pounds and Kathy does a warm-up set. Eddie is impressed that Kathy knows exactly what to do. Eddie continues to raise the weight for Kathy, getting up to 100 pounds. Kathy, laying on the bench, tells Eddie, "Okay, spot me." Kathy lowers the bar to her chest and raises the bar without any help. All energetic, Kathy tells Eddie, "Let's do 120, please, please, please." They put 10 more pounds on each side and Kathy gets back on the bench. Laying on the bench, Kathy tells Eddie, "I've never done 120 before." Eddie, giving Kathy some confidence, tells her, "Yeah, but you will today." Kathy lowers the weight to her chest and starts to raise the bar. Eddie tells her, "Come on, you can do it. You can do it." As Kathy raises the bar, Eddie tells her, "Push, push." After Kathy returns the bar to the uprights all by herself, she gets off the bench. She gives Eddie a high five as she exclaims, "New max. Awesome." Kathy tells Eddie, "Okay, now it's your turn." Eddie gets on the bench and does a warm-up set. While Eddie is doing his warm-up set, Kathy takes two dumbbells and starts doing overhead dumbbell presses. After Eddie finishes his warm-up set, he looks over at Kathy working with the dumbbells. Teasing Eddie, Kathy says, "You didn't think I was going to just sit around and watch, did you?" Eddie replies, "It almost looks like you've done this before." Kathy humorously replies, "Yeah. Maybe once or twice." It is clear to Eddie that Kathy is no novice at working out. Kathy and Eddie have more fun working out together than they could have imagined. After working out for about an hour, Kathy and Eddie head upstairs for dinner. After dinner, it comes time for Eddie to walk Kathy home. Kathy tells Eddie's mom and dad, "Thank you so much for having me over for dinner. It was really good." Eddie's mom tells Kathy, "We've enjoyed having you. Come over anytime." Eddie is certainly glad to hear that. Eddie's mom says to Kathy, "It's cold out. Would you like me to drive you home?" Kathy replies, "No, thank you. It's only a half mile, and we like to walk." As they walk out the door, Eddie tells his mom, "I'll be back later." On the way, Kathy tells Eddie, "We're taking the long way home today." Eddie replies, "Which way is that?" Kathy tells Eddie, "When we get there, I'll show you." As they approach the elementary school, Kathy takes a detour into the schoolyard. There is another smaller entrance for kids who walk to school on the other side of the field, which is actually a shortcut to Kathy's house. Eddie tells Kathy, "This looks like it's a shortcut." Kathy, leaving Eddie wondering, tells Eddie, "No, it's the long way. You'll see." Walking through the field, Eddie tells Kathy, "I really had a great time today." Kathy replies, "Me too. We'll have to work out together more often." As they are walking, they come up to a small row of bleachers next to the peewee ball field. Kathy sits on the bleachers, and Eddie sits next to her, holding her hand. Kathy gets up and sits on Eddie's lap. Putting her arms around Eddie, Kathy looks Eddie in the eye, telling him, "This, Eddie, is the long way home." Kathy kisses Eddie, with an embrace so warm it could melt the light snow that is beginning to fall. Kathy and Eddie make out on the bleachers for quite a while, each wondering where the other has been their entire lives. Eventually, they have to continue their way back to Kathy's house. As they stand up and walk, neither Kathy nor Eddie can walk straight. Seemingly drunk with each other's passion, they stumble toward the school entrance on Kathy's street. Eddie tells Kathy, "I really like taking the long way home. Kathy passionately tells Eddie, when I say, let's take the long way home, well, this is the long way home. As they approach Kathy's house, Kathy sighs because the evening is coming to an end. She says to Eddie, well, here's my stop again. Eddie walks Kathy to the door. They kiss goodnight, and Kathy passionately whispers in his ear, see you tomorrow. Kathy goes inside as Eddie walks to the sidewalk. As Eddie walks away, Kathy watches through the window, sad that Eddie has to make the half-mile walk home by himself. To Eddie, who can easily run a half-mile in less than 2 minutes and 30 seconds, the trip home seems like it takes forever without Kathy. A few days later, Eddie's mother, Nina, encounters Mark's mother, Mariana, at the local farmer's market. They both shop in the same markets and see each other quite frequently. Nina tells Mariana, Eddie's got a girl now, so he's not home as much. She's good for him. They really like each other. Mariana replies, Mark's got his eye on someone too. Some girl helping out with the track team. Nina tells Mariana, I guess they are at that age. Bearing some good news, Nina tells Mariana, Eddie and his girl, Katerina, go out and eat after school a lot. He's even saving me a little on my grocery bill. Nina and Mariana compare notes as usual about what is fresh or a good deal. They then continue shopping on their own, only to meet again on another day. With the state invitational meet just around the corner, Eddie invites his parents, his friends, and everyone he knows. Eddie knows that, with people watching him, he will run a better race. Mark, Braden, Johnson, Mitchell, and Bobby B. also invite their parents, who were all going to show up anyway. Mitchell also invites his girlfriend, Amber Amy, who is still in middle school. Forming their own cheerleading squad, the tribe will definitely gain a slight edge over the competition. Paula and Barbara also invite their parents to the meet. Kathy, however, has a surprise for Eddie about her parents attending the meet.